Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs. Plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. Today, I am joined by Jacob Sanderson. We just did our first ever show together on Pat Corain's legendary Upside mailbag like 2 weeks ago. I think we're going to be collaborating on some dynasty rankings here. And it's go time. There are, you could spend morning till dusk drafting best ball teams and you would not run out. Starting today, you could do nothing but draft. That could be your full-time job, and by the time the season starts, you would not run out of contests to enter, right? There's no maxing. You would be able to keep entering.
Yeah, it's at least my part-time job, but you could certainly make it a full-time job. And yeah, you'd be golden. You could just hop DraftKings, Drafters, Underdog, whatever else. We could petition to get draft.com back in our lives. You would never run out of best ball drafting. It's a glorious time of year.
It is. I don't feel burnt out yet, despite, like, normally to me when it comes is when I realize that I am way behind on DraftKings. Like last year, I realized I was way behind on DraftKings. And I was like, I just won't. There's not really a way for me to realistically do this. So what I've been doing is actually saving Underdog bullets, only doing like one or two of those a day, and just like being in a DraftKings draft. And even if I end up having to auto and I got to go make dinner or I got to do something with the dogs or whatever, it's like, I don't even care. I just want to get these done because I'll be so mad when it's August 3rd and I have 50 DraftKings ones done and I got 100 left to do.
Yeah, it's the late August, like every year, at least the last couple of years, I've always been like, I'm going to do Underdog early and then like I'll do DraftKings when all the fish are in there. I'll do all my DraftKings drafts in late August. And then the problem is like, Underdog's such a pleasurable experience because you're just like walking
just
through the park.
So much easier.
Right? Like
yes.
You're walking through the forest. You're hear the birds singing. You're like, oh, great. I'm going to draft the best ball mania team. You don't even feel bad about it because you're in nature.
No.
And you're just rolling through. And it's like such a nice harmonizing experience. And then DraftKings, you're like, well, I have to be at my desktop. And I have to be in like a dark room with a lamp and my like Himalayan crystal providing me some sort of link
to
life.
You just cannot close out of the app. On DraftKings, you
right.
can't, if for whatever reason you go to another screen, you respond to a text message, you go open Discord, whatever, something is going to bug out and you're going to end up auto drafting Mac Jones at pick 69 and Justin Herzig is going to call you out in front of everyone. It's unavoidable. It's unavoidable.
For sure.
It's horrible. So our exercise today, we are going to do our very early zero RB list. Obviously this is way before the RotoViz stuff is going to come out. Main events aren't even open yet, yada, yada, so on and so forth. But people are drafting. We got to give the people what they want. So we each have 5 guys. I don't think we're going to have very much overlap, actually. My guess is that
I prepared 7 just in case. So
Okay, cool. All right. So I guess I ordered mine in terms of price. So cheapest to most expensive.
Well.
Okay. So perfect. We're golden here. So I'll let you start with your 5th one.
Okay, my cheapest one, this guy gets drafted in not even every single draft option, is Jerome Ford. We talked actually on the last show that we did about the Browns' incessant use of another back, no matter how much anybody wants it to be full Chubb season. It's never full Chubb season.
It literally and never will be. And it wasn't even full right. Kareem Hunt season when fucking car salesman D'Ernest Johnson was there.
No, it's not at all. So I think I talked about then that I think that the Browns subscribe to what I call a comparative advantage theory of their running back room, which is like, even if one guy's better at every single aspect of playing running back, they're just going to use the guy who's almost as good at certain aspects to some extent. And they'll even leave that guy out there for certain goal line series. Like, it's so bizarre, but the Browns are very, they don't even care if Nick Chubb is out there. If it's not Nick Chubb's series and they get inside the 10, they don't put Nick Chubb in the game. Like, they've done that with Hunt. They've done that with D'Ernest Johnson. So I think Ford has opportunities for certainly playing a lot of pass down snaps. I think he's probably going to be playing in the 2-minute drill. And I think if he just happens to be on the field when they reach the 6-yard line, I don't think he's getting the obvious like Tony Pollard yank in that situation. So I think almost all the guys that are clear-cut backups that also have a path to standalone upside in like even a half-decent offense seem to be going 14th round, 15th round. I think Ford is that, and he's an 18th rounder. There's nobody else that's on this depth chart. Like, they let D'Ernest Johnson walk. They let Kareem Hunt walk. They didn't make any effort to replace anybody in the draft. They've talked up him preseason. I remember that Matthew Berry article came out where they're like, no, he's clearly number two. And then they showed it with their actions. So I think he's clear cut, contingent value upside, just walks into being an RB2 if anything happens to Nick Chubb. And I think he's going to sprinkle in some usable weeks in the meantime. So I think he has that sort of early teens type profile you can get in round 18 just because he hasn't actually shown anything. And he's kind of an interesting prospect. Like, he's a guy that even as a day three player, originally went to Alabama, 4.46 speed, kind of has that vaguely all-purpose skill set.
We love an Alabama recruit, right? That is. I definitely do think there is a little bit of signal there. He was really good at Cincinnati. He caught a little bit of passes, you know, but I kind of like that stuff too. He wasn't on my list mostly because I think, unfortunately, Kareem Hunt, Zeke, Fournette, that feels like one of the likely destinations there. But I'm totally with it. I've taken Jerome Ford. Like, I don't, that to me is a situation that remains in flux, very similar to the Vikings. I think the Chiefs backfield actually is still in flux. Like, people are sort of treating it like it's McKinnon, Pacheco, and Clyde. And I very much think this is a team that would love to bring in a 29-year-old guy at some point. So not on my list, but a good one, a guy worth taking. Like, for example, I think he's a much better selection than guys going ahead of him, like Dwayne McBride, Abanikanda, James Robinson, guys like that. Like, I think he clearly has more upside and more standalone. Like, some of these, the running back ADP has not gotten sharp yet. Like, the back end, people are just clicking names they recognize, I think, right now.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys, like, especially the rookies, like those, like you mentioned, Abanikanda and Dwayne McBride. Yeah. There's a lot of guys where it's like, probably 40% chance of being a healthy and active in week one. And I think I'm at this point in the proceedings with so much time left to play out. Like, I want to make sure that I have bullets where I'm not looking at my teams on August 25th. And I'm like, I wonder what I drafted in May. And then I'm like, ah, I drafted 20% Keyonte Ingram. He's not even going to make the Cardinals. Like, that's
right.
Not what I want to do.
Mine is basically new age. My number five is new age Keyonte Ingram, which is Malik Davis for the Dallas Cowboys. He's locked into making the roster because he plays special teams. So I think the third running back roster spot is likely not between Malik Davis and Deuce Vaughn. I believe it's between Deuce Vaughn and Ronald Jones. My guess is Ronald probably doesn't make the team. He'll probably do exactly what he did with the Chiefs last year, which is remain on the practice squad or a healthy scratch all year long. I mean, Malik Davis, kind of unlike Ford, not really a special player, not really a guy you look at his track record and you're like, oh yeah, this guy rocks. No, he was like mostly a backup rotational guy at Florida, fine physical stuff, but we know kind of at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. And the big thing why I think he's worth taking, sort of similar to Ford, is that I don't think the Cowboys are going to do this, but there is certainly a chance that Schottenheimer and the new running back coach or whatever treats him the same way the last coaching staff did, which is this guy's literally going to break if we play more than 30 snaps in a game, in which case there is a role for another guy in that backfield. But I think mostly he's just locked into making the roster and probably a good handcuff and an offense that's going to run the ball a ton.
Yeah, I love that one. I've been hesitating a bit because maybe this is just like my broken brain as a lifelong Tony Pollard fan. I'll believe that Zeke isn't a Cowboy when he signs another team or announces his retirement. Like, otherwise, I just am still waiting for Ezekiel Elliott to sign. But if he doesn't in like the next while, or like, I have it marked on my calendar, like if Ezekiel Elliott signs with any other NFL franchise, I'm doing nothing that day except for drafting Malik Davis on every single team. Like I'll just generate maximum exposure. Because I really do think, like, last year they had 524 running back touches and 292 of them didn't go to Tony Pollard. Like, he already had 230 last year. I don't know what his breaking point is. I don't think it's 230. It's probably like 250, 280.
My guess is 280. And my guess is that he can still get there. Like, he can still totally be running back 7 on 280. No problem.
For sure. Like, I think he can get to 280, even if he gets. Even if he got 300, like, that's still 230 touches from last year. And maybe they won't run as fast as last year. They won't be able to run as much as last year. But point is, they use their running backs a lot. And Pollard can get his. And there's still a lot of touches left over for other backs. And that's probably Malik Davis more than it's Rojo. So I'm with you on that. And I'm really with you on the game day active. Like, Malik Davis is drawing way more live for the I got 12 carries today in a game Tony Pollard played. Rojo's probably only seeing the field if Tony Pollard is injured, and I can't even envision that world without getting sad. So,
yeah. All right, number 4 on the 0 running back list for you is whom?
Yeah, I will go with Tank Bigsby. This is another one.
He was one of mine.
Sweet. So I also like. I legitimately like Tank Bigsby. I think a lot of people kind of think he sucks, and it's fair because his numbers would say that he does kind of suck. My take with Bigsby is just, I think he has all the tools that you need out of a good running back, and especially out of like a good handcuff running back, which is that he has viable workhorse size, 6 feet, 210. He caught passes, had 30 passes in his third year at Auburn after their third down back, Shivers, transferred away from the program. He was clearly their guy in all passing situations. And I think he's a really strong fit for the Doug Peterson scheme, which is really running back friendly. And then Travis Etienne is kind of weird. Like, there's a prevailing narrative that he can't really be an every down runner, that he's kind of boom bust. It doesn't really show up in the data. Like, you look at the numbers.
He's got a weird gait.
He's got a weird gait.
The film guys say he runs weird.
I don't like how he runs. It's true. You look at the data and it doesn't actually really support it. Like, he actually has a really high success rate and he's an extraordinarily efficient runner. And he kind of always has been an extraordinarily efficient runner. But I do think there's some signal to it. And I think that there's some signal to the fact that he does have a pretty significant injury history. They didn't want to use him as an every down guy last year. They especially didn't particularly want to use him in passing situations last year. And Bigsby has that history. I think he has a lot of outs. I think they might use him as a supplementary short yardage type of guy, as a quote-unquote more reliable decision maker. They might even use him on passing downs. And then the big thing is, like, if Travis Etienne's weird gait comes in and he has any foot issues or any other injury issues, then Bigsby could potentially be a three-down back on probably a top 5, top 10 offense. So I'm really excited about Bigsby. And, of course, he's the first running back that, you know, they've actually invested in since Doug Peterson has been there, unless you count Snoop Connor, who couldn't beat out Jamichael Hasty. So I think you're getting a clear-cut backup, probably some standalone value, and then tons of contingent upside in a particularly good offense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's got a ton of standalone upside. They were really playing ETN a lot last year. By the time they started getting good last season, ETN was like getting, you know, 75-80% of the stuff, which is, I mean, it's a reason to be kind of bullish on ETN. Like,
but then they scaled it back a little bit, because who played more snaps in the divisional round? Jamichael Hasty was their leading snap getter out of the running back room against the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's so well, because they were getting their asses beat in that game. So look. There are gonna be times where they get their ass beat a couple times this year as well too. So I just think if you look at where he's at in the hierarchy of ADP, there are guys who I think are like drawing dead to be usable in fantasy going around him. And then I actually think there's also a huge tier break after Bigsby and Jeff Wilson go on underdog at running back 53 and 54, that's where you get into the, like, the total question mark zone. Which is not to say that I never take Leonard Fournette because he is going to sign in a place that's really annoying. And it's not to say that I never take Kenneth Gainwell because I kind of want to bet against DeAndre Swift. But these guys are not on my list. I actually don't even really care that much about Bigsby's prospect profile. Other than that, he's the right size. That's the biggest thing to me, is that if you plug, I mean, JJ has talked about this a ton, like, size ends up correlating. It's so stupid, but like, if you if you only had one metric other than draft capital for running backs, you definitely want to choose weight, because it ends up correlating so heavily to how these guys produce.
And then the next thing you want to pick is, have they caught any passes? And the answer to Bigsby is both, right? It's like, he caught 30 passes, he's 210 pounds, and he was drafted on day two. So, like, to me, we can even quibble about the standalone role. I don't even think it matters. I think the biggest thing is, like, if anything happens to Travis Etienne at any time, you're freaking pumped to put, like, that you have Tank Bigsby on your teams. You're searching through your teams to find where you have Tank Bigsby, because he's going to probably play a ton. Whereas you look at a guy like a Roshon Johnson, it's not as clear to me. It's like, could he be the lead back? Maybe. Could he also maybe need two injuries to get 15 points a week? Also, maybe. Like, it's a little bit more ambiguous. With Bigsby, to me, I think it's really clear, and he's very cheap, where good offense, good size, good pass catching, anything happens to Etienne, he's starting for you every single week.
I definitely agree with that. And it's a good offense. You want to be attached to it. Normally, handcuffs in good offenses, like, you know, if it's August 3rd and we know that Tank Bigsby is the handcuff, they've cut Jermichael Hasty, or they've cut D'Ernest Johnson, and it's just very clear, then he's going to be, you know, 10 spots more expensive or whatever. Yeah. So that he was my third, only because of the context of how these guys go in ADP. But Jeff Wilson Jr. Is my next guy. We talked about this. I've actually been talking about this all week, because we did the Swolecast and we did ADP chasing. But I basically, I mean, I'm comfortable with the Dolphins running backs, where they're going, all of them. Like, I don't love paying the price on a chain, but I also don't want to not have any of them, because, like, I see it so clearly, right? It's week 17. Mostert has gotten banged up. Jeff Wilson Jr. is only playing third downs now. And, you know, a chain takes 2 70-yard screen passes to the house or whatever. Like, it's just very obvious. But I basically think that the ADP has it exactly wrong based on how they should be projected. I think Jeff Wilson Jr. should be projected to score the most fantasy points in the backfield. A chain should be projected to score the second most, and Mostert the third most, because Mostert is the one who's obviously going to be replaced by a chain. Like, if he comes in and he's awesome and he understands blocking and the coaches like him and he just, you know, all that stuff that happens with day two rookies, he's just going to come in and Raheem Mostert is going to be Jerick McKinnon. You know, he's going to be the break glass in case of emergency guy. Whereas Jeff Wilson Jr.'s role is the exact opposite. There's no one else on the roster who can supplant him. And I think maybe we think back to last season and we're like, oh, you know, Edmonds was there and Mostert had a couple big games. I mean, basically every game that Jeff Wilson Jr. was active for, he got double digit touches, goal line carries, and 50% or more of the snaps. There was a game he left injured, and there was a week 13 and week 14 game where they got shithoused, where they were just getting blown out and Mostert came in instead. But it doesn't make any sense for this guy to be, he plays some third downs. Like, he's not like a zero reception guy, and he gets the goal line work ahead of Mostert. He just feels like free money. It feels like picking up nickels, basically, Jeff Wilson Jr.
What percentage chance is Dalvin Cook a Miami Dolphin? That's the only thing that stops me from having like 50% exposure to Jeff Wilson.
That feels very real. I mean, we had the Minnesota Vikings changing the header of their Twitter.
That
profile.
Was what did it for me, by the way. I was like, I was on the, they'll probably just keep Cook. And then it doesn't matter what any like national reporter said, when they changed the header, I was like, oh, he's done. that was like fully for me the moment that I flipped.
I mean, it feels like, also, you know, we keep hearing this, oh, well, they'll just trade him. I don't, it's like, what, why has there been no movement on this? I don't know. I wonder if, you know, Hayden was telling me and Sam about how Dalvin like faked an injury to get like a guarantee of his contract so he couldn't be waived and lose like $2 million or something. Like that probably really pissed them off. I bet they were like, so I wonder if it's kind of like, oh, we're not going to trade you or we're not going to waive you until it's like shitty for you personally. Like it's going to, it's actually going to be annoying for you to have to like change your life like in like late July or whatever. I do wonder if there's stuff like that that happens because that is kind of a dick move by him, honestly.
Yeah, and we've seen it before. Like, it's not exact same situation because he was on a rookie deal, but like the Lenny might get cut rumors started in March, and then Lenny being cut happened in like late August, right? Like it's happened before where we've heard the rumors and then been like, oh, I guess it's not going to happen, and then it
Carlos
does happen.
Carlos Hyde on a veteran deal with the Chiefs.
Yeah, like we get the late ones. So I'm still not sold. Like I'm fully sold that Joe Mixon is a Bengal. I'm very not sold that Dalvin Cook is a Viking. And that's my only thing with Wilson. Like because if Dalvin Cook was to sign with the Dolphins tomorrow, what's the efficient ADP? Like Cook, I feel like, well, he'll just go too high, but I would probably be comfortable drafting Cook in like the fifth. He'll probably go higher than that. I don't care. He's bad. Yeah. And that's fine. I'm really happy to fade it. 28-year-old declining Dalvin Cook. A-Chain probably goes in like the 12th or the 13th, and then like Wilson and Mostert don't even get drafted,
No, I was gonna say I bet A-Chain doesn't really fall much at all. But I bet the consequence is the market is just done taking Mostert and Jeff Wilson Jr. that they basically go to zero,
which I think is somewhat reasonable. Like I think A-Chain's role early season. Probably pretty much the same, whether it's Dalvin or whether it's Mostert and Wilson. I think 100%. The difference is like he's drawing totally dead to be at 15 carry per game back late season without an injury if Dalvin's there. Like I think there's a path now where if A-Chain's just so good that they're like, we're not that beholden to Mostert and Wilson. I don't think that's necessarily likely, but it's in play. If Dalvin's there, like he's James Cook at that point, like from last year, barring maybe even multiple injuries. But yeah, if they don't sign Dalvin Cook, Wilson is horrendously mispriced. Because I agree, like Mostert is kind of whatever. Like I think he's pretty duplicative with the chain. He's also what, 32?
Yeah, and he's not also like, he's not a real running back. Like Raheem Mostert is he's got the wildest career. He was like a track guy at like at Purdue, never ran for 1,000 yards, was on like a billion practice squads, and then you know just Kyle Shanahan broke him out of purgatory, but like he's not a real running back, you know, he's just like a guy. Yeah. He's an athlete,
and he's also he had always been efficient until last year, and then he wasn't anymore, which is not that surprising because he's like 31, so like he's probably just bad now. And I mean, if he's not like the fastest running back in the NFL, then what do you have left, right?
Very little. All right, so that was both my third and my fourth, because they go right back to back in ADP on underdog.
Yeah. I will keep one more rookie, and it'll be Kendre Miller as my next guy. I'm kind of confused why Kendre Miller goes behind both A-Chain and Charbonnet on underdog right now. They all kind of go in a cluster in dynasty
because they paid Jamal Williams, and I think this works both ways. It's Taysom Hill existing, right?
Okay. Right.
So All right. I gotta explain this the right way. So Taysom Hill existing keeps every Saints player who could theoretically run the ball being bumped up a little bit in ADP. But the existence of Jamal Williams, Kendre Miller, Alvin Kamara also keeps Taysom Hill's ADP deflated a little bit. Like really people are just, and the Saints are going to be kind of bad too. So people are just kind of throwing up their hands and being like, I don't know. My guess is...
But they have such an easy schedule. Like, they could easily win 11 or 12 games. Like, every NFC South team's schedule is absolute cake because, well, they play each other, and then they only other play bad divisions, right? It's like they play the NFC North and the AFC South or something like that. It might be a different division than the AFC, but it's cake. Like, all four of them have such easy schedules.
Yeah. So... really, I would say probably ADP seems like roughly efficient on these players, other than if Kamara only gets like a 3-game suspension, in which case he ends up being like a huge smash. But it really will just be like whack-a-mole who scores the rushing touchdowns, right? Like if Taysom Hill scores 7 rushing touchdowns, you're going to hate having any of these guys. But if he scores 2, you're going to love having these guys.
But Jamal Williams is bad. Like, I think that we're like, we've lost sight of that Jamal Williams is bad because he scored a bunch of touchdowns last year, but he isn't good. And he catches 0 passes. He's like a stone. He used to kind of catch passes in Green Bay, but I don't know if that he can do that anymore. They certainly didn't think he could in Detroit. And he's not actually that efficient as a runner either. And he's really old. So he's probably just gets worse each and each year. And I don't know when Kamara is going to play. Like, if you told me Kamara gets 6 games, sure. If you told me he gets 10 games, sure. If you told me he's cut from the team at some point, like, I would believe that too. I'm not. And he's also bad too. Like, both these other running backs are very old. They're both declining pretty hard. And what surprises me is, like, in Dynasty rookie draft, people are grouping Miller in with Achane and Charbonnet. It's like a threesome. And to me, like, maybe not Achane, but Charbonnet, it's like, okay, he's clearly the second best running back on this team. Miller is like quite possibly the best running back on this team. So I get if you like Charbonnet was the guy with the higher pedigree, he's the guy with the higher draft capital. I get it a little bit more in Dynasty, but from a best ball perspective, I would much rather take Miller. Like, I think he has a pretty clear path to just being the lead guy by like week 6. I also think he has a pretty clear path to being like getting 2 touches per game. So it's certainly a wide range of outcomes. But I think it's entirely possible he's just fully the starting running back and the highest scoring running back at some point this year. It may still be in a messy committee, but I'm not counting on Kamara ever playing for the Saints. Like, I don't know. I'm also not counting that he doesn't play for like 14 games, but I'm kind of treating Kamara almost like Javonte Williams, where it's just like, it could be anything. He could play 16 games. He could play 0. I don't really know. But for Miller going in the teens, like, there's a possibility it's just him and Jamal Williams, who's old and doesn't catch any passes, for a team that's projected to win a lot of games.
Jamal Williams did catch passes in Green Bay.
Right, he did. And then he doesn't anymore. And I don't know which one it is. Like, I don't know if it's that they just thought he couldn't do it, but they were like sure he couldn't do it in Detroit. Because even when Swift went out, they were like, no, Craig Reynolds, you run all the routes. No.
Well, isn't this the deal of running backs in general, is that we, like, once you've demonstrated an ability to do it, it's just a matter of if your team throws the ball to you or not, if they decide to do that for you. Like, it's more of like offensive coordinator, quarterback decision making than it is. Like, obviously, like, some running backs like actually can't do it. They're like too stiff hipped, or they just don't understand it. But like Jamal Williams, I mean, he caught passes in college. He caught passes in Green Bay. I'm not saying Jamal Williams is like this like uber athlete or whatever, but also I mean, it's the Saints. Like, I would not be surprised if Jamal Williams is like getting force fed 1-yard touchdowns either.
It's very possible, for sure. I don't know. I have not drafted Jamal Williams yet at all. I've been drafting Kendre over him. Like, I just think they spent a day 2 pick on this back. Maybe they just think it's a redshirt year and they're like, look, we're going to deal with whatever we get out of Kamara. I don't know. We have Jamal. Kendre's like our running back of the future. Maybe they're like a dumb enough team to think of terms like running back of the future. But I just see it as very ambiguous. And I do think, like, I don't think that their roster is that good, but I think that they're a good enough team that they're probably going to score points and win games just by virtue of how bad all of the teams that they play are every single week. And I think he has a reasonable shot of being like a talented, explosive guy who's the lead back of on offense. And if we pair him with some of the safer guys that I think I'll mention soon that have a more stable, projectable role, I think he's a guy that I could be really pumped where, even without an injury, it's like week 11. And it's like, that's the guy I want on all my teams because he's the clear cut lead back for the next 6 weeks. I see that path with Miller, and I think he has some talent upside. I don't know that any of the other guys necessarily have that path to a standalone lead back role versus other guys who are relying more on contingent value, or guys who just have like a clear cut standalone segmented role instead of having that sort of every down type upside.
I just haven't thought that deeply about him, honestly. I just am so, the Saints are just annoying to me. Just their very existence is annoying to me. Like, Michael Thomas.
You love the Saints. They've gifted you Taysom Hill for
That's the Saint I take. That's the, that truly is the only Saint. one. That's, That's really the, well, in Olave, but yeah. I don't really have any interest in Michael Thomas. I'll like backdoor Carr and Shaheed if I'm like lost in the middle of a draft or something like that. But I just find them annoying. I
did you hear that Rashid Shaheed changed his number to 22? Undraftable.
Oh, that's like Sky Moore energy, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's even worse. He like sought it out. Like Sky Moore wore that in college and he was like, I'll stick with it. And that was the wrong decision, but I understand it. Shaheed watched Sky Moore last year and he was like, I want that. I want to be wearing a safety number. Yeah, it's unacceptable. So he's off my draft board now.
Like honestly, Sky, if he would change his number to 82, I think he might make it. I think it could bring like good vibe because no good wide receivers wear in the 80s anymore. I think he could bring like I think Sky could rejuvenate his career. I think he could figure it out. But he just 24, huh? 24 is what you want, Sky.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. It's really not. it's so bad. All right. So honestly, felt a little pithy to include Jerick McKinnon or Elijah Mitchell on this list. Like, I think everyone just gets it. There's nothing to say about them. Yeah. It's like Elijah Mitchell is CMC's handcuff. If CMC gets hurt, you win your league. There's literally not anything interesting to say about him. I don't think there's anything interesting to say about Jerick McKinnon either.
I think we're chasing a bit of a ghost with McKinnon, honestly. Like, Jerick McKinnon, it was my highest drafted player last year. It was a great experience. Like, I felt as though, like, 6 years of my life truthering for Jerick McKinnon for nothing was finally paid off in whole. I don't know. Like, are we really going to do this again? I feel like that's trying to get lightning to strike twice, taking him in like the 11th round.
Well, hasn't he done? He's done it 2 years in a row, though. McKinnon.
Well, 1 year in the playoffs, not in actual for fantasy.
It's the same thesis, though.
Yeah, right? But he did nothing. Like, if you drafted him on underdog, you got like 0 points from him 2 years ago.
Well, that was when they thought Clyde still existed, right? The Clyde does not exist now. I would say the biggest reason to not, I mean, this price for McKinnon is fine, but I think that if it's August and they haven't signed anyone else, he's going to be going where like a chain goes. Like, he's going to be going in like the 10th round,
very possible.
I'm actually with you. Like, I'm not drafting McKinnon a lot right now. He was a much better bet last year when he was free. And Clyde was still going, and Clyde was going in like the 8th or 9th round or whatever last year. Clyde is the better bet now. I mean, Clyde, you want to be real about it. Clyde is the better bet right now.
No, I don't want
he's stone free. He truly is free. I mean, he could get cut, but if they don't sign Kareem Hunt, if they don't sign Zeke, if they don't sign Fournette, he's playing. I mean, it just is what it is. He will be an active player on the Kansas City Chiefs. And my guess is, my true guess and prognostication would be he has more touches week one than Jerick McKinnon, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's very possible, right? Like, McKinnon, I think people forget McKinnon. Like, the timing of McKinnon's year to me is why his ADP is so high. Like, if he had the exact same year, but his weeks were distributed not to align with the best ball playoffs and everybody's fantasy playoffs, he would be going in like pick 185. Like, if the stretch that he had from week like 12 through 16 or whatever it was actually week 7 through 11, then like we wouldn't, and it's not like it's like he got it and then he retained it. Like, he was terrible throughout the actual playoffs. Like, if you played Jerick McKinnon in DFS in any of the Chiefs playoff games, like, you lost money. So I think like he had this insane stretch where he just monopolized a ton of touches and luck box touchdowns like crazy. And I think that's what people remember. People forget that every week when I was writing like my running back screaming column, well, they definitely forget about that column. But what they forget is that 54% snaps for Jerick McKinnon. Oh, he got 61% of the routes. He had 2 targets and 1 carry. Like, that was the report on Jerick McKinnon for like 7 straight weeks. And then eventually those routes turned into touches. They mostly turned into touches after all of their receivers got hurt also. And they were like, he's the only other guy that can catch passes. Not that they have good receivers now, but I do think people forget how many empty calorie routes like Jerick McKinnon was running last year until basically the best ball playoffs when he became a god.
I mean, you know, that's what if they just do the same thing again, though? Have you thought about it? Have you processed
it? It would be great. Like, I'll draft Jerick McKinnon just because he's probably one of my favorite players of all time. And anytime that he's successful, if I'm not financially benefiting from it, I just won't be able to face myself in the mirror.
That's the deal. Is I think you take him, you just take him when you have Mahomes stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That's the time to take him. You don't add him as like a one-off or whatever, right? You want that correlation.
Yeah.
Okay. So my second guy here, someone explain to me why we've given every other player like Antonio Gibson infinity chances, drafted him way too high, you know, chase the ghost, right? I'm kind of thinking like CJ Spiller type guys. I mean, we have chased that fucking ghost.
Jerick McKinnon, you might say.
Jerick McKinnon like tore his ACL, you know, was on like his fourth team. We're still taking, it just doesn't matter, right? But all we've decided that Antonio Gibson is dead because Brian Robinson like churned along for 2.7 yards per carry. No, I mean, I think Gibson is the, I don't know. Number I'd probably, one. If I haven't done
he's number one,
I haven't done rankings yet. I would probably rank him like running back 25. I think if I was doing my rankings or something like that, like cause he, it's not, again, it's, I think people are to your McKinnon point, I think just having bad memories, like I think their memory is that Gibson stopped playing, you know, was useless when Robinson was getting all these empty touches. And it's not true. I mean, he was still involved on third downs, still involved in the passing game, and was more was not a super efficient runner, but was, in the context of what was happening for the Washington Commanders, still more efficient than Brian Robinson.
Yeah, this is why I made seven. This is an audio program, so you couldn't see me actively fist pumping when you said Gibson, but this is by far my most drafted running back. I have over 40% of Antonio Gibson right now. I think he's just horrendously mispriced. I would much rather take him straight up over Brian Robinson. I view the situation basically like the Damian Harris Ramondre Stevenson situation last year, where you have two guys. The most likely scenario is that they're in a platoon in which one guy has a little more of the rushing, one guy has all the receiving. But if Antonio Gibson gets hurt, Brian Robinson's role changes 0%. I don't know who they signed to play on third downs, but it's somebody. Like, there's a better chance that you, Davis Maddock, is playing third and 10 for the Washington Commanders than Brian Robinson. So, but if Brian Robinson gets hurt, like, Antonio Gibson could theoretically play almost every snap. Like, I'm sure Chris Rodriguez will come in and plow ahead for a couple yards
There's been a lot of Chris Rodriguez chatter.
Well, there can be Chris. I don't care about Chris Rodriguez chatter. He was well.
Yeah, like I don't buy it. But overall there's been a pick, lot of
like
it.
Whatever. Like, so I'm sure he'll see some touches to either Rodriguez, or I don't know if Jonathan Williams is still in the building, or whoever else they sign. Insert bad running back. But there's like a theoretical path for Gibson to be in 80% snaps, 80% routes, all long down distance, all short down and distance touches guy that doesn't exist for Brian Robinson.
You only have to go back a year for Antonio Gibson to be a league winner, right?
Like, right.
I don't know.
We've seen this path before. Like, and I don't think I've been a Gibson guy, and like I was not a Gibson guy last year. But yeah, it's so easy to be a Gibson guy again. And you're right. People do forget that he had a good role. Like when Robinson started to emerge, there was like the one Thursday night game, which is, I guess, the game that people remember where Gibson barely played at all.
I was going to say Robinson had like 28 carries or something in that game. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Rivera was like, oh, we forgot about Antonio Gibson in the second half. And everybody like made fun of him. But then what they forget is like the next week, Gibson, I think, scored like two touchdowns, and they started using him on way more routes than JD McKissick. And he became like their kind of pass down ish, but also interesting deployment guy. Like, he was getting actual ADOT routes. Like, they were throwing him 10, 15 yards downfield. And now you get Eric Bieniemy. We just talked about Jerick McKinnon for 5 minutes, right? Like, Eric Bieniemy likes throwing the ball to the back. He likes a back who's going to be able to pass protect. Like, I don't know that Brian Robinson makes any sense in his scheme if he retains almost anything that comes over from the Chiefs. I think there's a lot of upside for Gibson as a standalone guy, a lot of upside for Gibson as a contingent guy. I think he's the most mispriced running back on the board, quite frankly. I think he should be like a round 7-8 pick, and you can get him firmly in the double digits.
I don't know if he's the most mispriced. He probably is. He probably is, just because he's flip-flopped with his teammate. I mean, there's a chance if we knew the results of the season that David Montgomery or Javonte Williams would be, because there's a chance David Montgomery just leads the Lions backfield in touches.
That's true.
And we expect that to be a good backfield. And Madison might just be.
Oh yeah. Madison.
Right.
A good one.
Right. He might.
Yeah. Madison's a good one for sure.
Yeah. For this exercise though, we were only using guys outside of the top 100 picks. Okay. So wait, that was my two. Who was your number one? I have one guy left on my list.
So I have a couple of guys left because I'm scratching Gibson. So I think that leaves me two slots left because we did Bigsby, Ford, Miller. Yeah. Okay. So I'm moving up now. I have extra guys. Not as fun as Antonio Gibson, but Damian Harris just feels
this is my top guy. Not fun, but will score more fantasy points and half PPR than James Cook. It's like taking Singletary. Yeah. You're drinking your apple cider vinegar.
But I think he's like also a better player than Singletary too. And he's like a legitimate goal line back. Like they've never really had a goal line back in Buffalo, and it's been fine because they have Josh Allen. But Singletary's tiny. Like people forget that. He's bigger than James Cook, but Singletary's also undersized. Zach Moss just can't play football. Damian Harris is like a responsible professional running back that they just haven't really had his archetype yet in Buffalo. These two guys' roles are like 100% bifurcated, where like if Harris gets hurt, X other running back is taking his role. If Cook gets hurt, X other running back is taking his role. There's not a lot of contingent value. I think that they operate entirely in parallel of one another, but you still have an opportunity of a guy who's going to have a consistent role every single week and he's going to punch in a touchdown hopefully every second week. And if you are doing zero RB rosters, like you need these types of guys to get you through the early season and just have that stability while you wait on your Tank Bigsby or your Jerome Ford or whoever else to get in there. And he gets to do it in a good offense too. So I think Harris is like a great fit for any zero RB structure, and also has like a legitimate path to single week upside, where any week he's in play for 100 yards and two touchdowns.
I mean, if James Cook just is the James Cook that he was last year and doesn't make makes marginal improvements, but is not that much more involved. You know, I mean, like James Cook was playing behind Nyheim Hines last season. Anyone who's familiar with Nyheim Hines knows that that's not good. Right. So Damian Harris, I mean, the tagline is Devin Singletary, but good. Right. I mean, Damian Harris led the NFL in touchdowns. We are so bad at this. He led the NFL in touchdowns two years ago. And now, because I don't know, and you know, you do kind of think like, oh, they've been talking a lot about not having Josh Allen run so much, not calling his own number. So I mean, you don't have to squint to see it's week 17, Bills Patriots revenge game for Damian Harris, and you know, McDermott's dialing up a 4-touchdown game for Damian. Like you don't even have to squint to see it. It's right there.
And they're going to be in blowouts, right? Like you're going to have weeks where they're up 31-10. They're not going to run Josh Allen in those games. And then it's going to be, here 100%. You go, Damian. Like, here's your third touchdown today. And it's going to be great. He did this 2 years ago. We always should react so hard to whatever happened most recently about these running backs. And like you said, they've demonstrated their skills and effectively their range of outcomes within those skills kind of just remains the same. Like it's like Antonio Gibson's the same thing. It's like he always had it in his range of outcomes to get cocked as a runner because he has a highly questionable rushing profile. But we didn't care about that 2 years ago. We barely even cared about it last year. He still has it in his range of outcomes to get a lot of carries by accident and add that onto all of the explosive playmaking and everything else, right? Like, so I think that it's the same thing with Harris. Like we saw the bad result from him last year and we forget that we were all eagerly drafting him in like round 7 or 8 in a way worse offense, paired with a way better running back just last year.
Yeah, no, you are 100% correct. So mostly aligned for us, other than Kendre Miller, who
that's true.
I can't. The Saints, man. Taysom
is just living rent free in your head. Anytime you want to click any other state.
And Derek Carr and everything. they truly give me the ick. They do. Yeah. Like I just get the ick from the New Orleans Saints, right? Other than,
and if they ever snap the ball with 4 seconds left in the play clock, never a chance.
Right.
So.
It'll be the first time. Okay. Yeah. Who else do you have on your list? Did you have anyone else?
Yeah. I had one other guy. I don't know. It feels so lame because it's like everybody's guy. But I'm still going to name check him. I still think Samaje Perine's a smash. I don't buy the Javonte Williams stuff.
What are we doing, man?
Yeah, I love Samaje Perine. This has been a long running bit for me in Dynasty, where I have this thing called the Samaje P line, which is any wide receiver, like once any wide receiver that you wouldn't rather roster than like effectively the worst, least rostered backup running back below the P line, you got to cut them. You got to go pick up a backup running back. Samaje Perine finally blossomed last year. We saw it play out. He can do everything you need. He's not particularly good, but he can catch passes. He can pass block. He can handle short yardage work. He needs everything you need out of a fantasy running back, and especially a handcuff running back. I'm like so bearish on the Javonte injury news. I don't care how positive it is. Until he's playing on my television screen in week one, there's no chance I believe it. I'm fudding it. I think that you look at multi-ligament tear. We've seen this several times. If Javonte comes back early in the season, he's going to be an extremely high injury risk or just a bad at football risk for the rest of this year. And I'm still not super convinced that Javonte is even some workhorse running back, even if he was fully healthy, because we basically have a 1 week sample of it. He split time with Michael Carter at UNC, he split time with Melvin Gordon as a rookie, and we have one half of football in which he played as a workhorse running back last year before he got injured. So I think Perine's going to probably be playing long down and distance the entirety of the year. I think he's going to get legitimate drives to come in and handle the full workload. And for as long as Javonte's hurt, or if he gets re-hurt, he's going to be the guy. And we know with Sean Payton's offense, they want to throw the ball to running backs. I just think he's a total smash, even as his ADP keeps creeping up. And I'm praying for continued positive Javonte hype videos throughout June and July so that I can just keep drafting Samaje Perine.
Are you also similarly bearish on Breece Hall? Or is this injury pessimism only running one way?
I should be more bearish on Breece Hall, probably. I'm not a Twitter doctor, so I just kind of believe what they tell me, and I don't apply a lot of scrutiny to it. The Twitter doctor industrial complex seems to have a lot more faith in Breece Hall's single ligament tear.
They're some of my favorite people on Earth. Like, just like some of the most unhinged characters on Twitter are like fantasy Twitter doctors.
And it's so funny, like, what the zeitgeist is of, like, the fantasy medical consensus each year, depending on the injuries. And the big thing this year is for sure, like, wow, that's a multi-ligament tear, but that's a single ligament tear. And it's like the prognosis from the Twitter doctor industrial complex is effectively, like, if you have a multi-ligament tear, you may as well be dead. And if you have a single ligament tear, like, it's like nothing ever happened is sort of what it seems to be, at least, like, the memification of it. I'm more into Breece Hall, A, because I just think he's a lot better than Javonte Williams. I also have more faith in that offense. And I just genuinely trust that the medical consensus is a lot more bullish on Hall being legitimately ready to rock early in season versus Javonte Williams being probably not going to play early, probably not going to be as good when he comes back just due to the different nature of the injury. But so I've been drafting Breece Hall more so, but I do think he's certainly a high risk pick. What about
you? I mean, the risk with Breece is way higher. You're spending a second round pick on to acquire the services of Breece.
Third round pick. You can do a third round pick. Where have you been drafting any Breece or no Breece?
No, I fucking take Derrick Henry like a real man.
I've also been taking Derrick Henry, but I've been taking some Breece too. I take every running back at that turn. Like I think the running backs at that turn are so much better than the wide receivers. I take the most Pollard, but now unfortunately he goes to the top of the tier. I want Zeke to sign in Dallas so badly because I would love to draft Paul. Like, if I could draft Pollard where, like, Najee Harris and Etienne and Gibbs go, if Zeke signs, that would make my year. So that's what I'm praying for. But otherwise, like, you're taking Jacobs and Henry over Breece?
I have not taken Jacobs yet on Underdog yet, I don't think. I think I've only taken him on.
Because he's actually, like, a pretty fair price. But, it's important to have principles.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I just prefer Pollard and Henry to him. And I also really like Ramondre.
Ramondre is a smash.
Like, and clicking Jacobs does still give me the ick a little bit, you know? Like, just on principle. Not that I think he's a bad pick or whatever, but yeah. And I really just want to click Henry right now, because I think by the time the slappies get in, he's gonna be like going where like Saquon is now. You know, like the time to draft Henry is now.
Yeah, so. I definitely think like when the mouth breathers come in August, you're gonna be like, oh God, you nerds have Derrick Henry as a third round pick. Get out of here. And they'll be right also. Like Derrick Henry shouldn't be a third round pick. There's no need for this. Like he's still a good running back. And to me, that's the other thing. There's no difference to me between a 27-year-old running back and a 29-year-old running back. Like until we've seen significant signs of decline, like they just kind of are what they are until they aren't. And some running backs die sooner than other running backs. But like Henry is still pretty good. And I'm just projecting him to continue to be good at massive volume until he shows to me that he isn't. And in round three, I mean, he's an epic smash.
Yeah. All right, man. Tell the people where to go, where they can think about thinking, how they can support you, yeah. how they can continue the Jacob Sanderson experience.
Absolutely. You can find me on Substack at jacobsanderson.substack.com. It's called Thinking About Thinking. You'll find it posted in my Twitter. I have not written for the last week and a bit because I wrote an absolutely obscene amount of rookie content. So I'm just allowing that to percolate in the minds of the subscribers for a bit, but I will be back shortly. I'll be writing primarily best ball stuff for the rest of the summer. And like Davis alluded to, we might have some rankings, things that we're working on together, myself and you and Pat. So make sure to stay tuned for that as well.
Beautiful. All right, everyone, we're going to go ahead and get out of here. I will, we'll be back. The ADP Chasing Show will be on this feed on Monday, and I will be doing a show with Bimeford next week as well. So see y'all then.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.